Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you are an author listening to today's interview and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details, or you can contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I have a special author with me. She is Taya Baker. By day, Taya is a judicial assistant for the DeKalb County in Georgia State Court, and by night, she is an author, editor, and poet. To her credit, she has published two novels, Every Time I Close My Eyes, which was re-released in March of 2013, and Daddy's Big Girl, released November of 2013. Her third novel, titled Yet to Be Determined, is scheduled for release February of 2017. And I'm interested in that title, so let's bring her on. Welcome to the network, Taya.
Thank you. Nice to be on here, Pat.
Oh, it's really nice to have you. I was looking forward to this today. So before we get to your books, maybe tell us a bit about you growing up, because I read on your website that you lived in East Cleveland, and I am a native Clevelander, and I'm still here.
No wonder I feel a connection with you.
There you go.
grew up in East Cleveland, went to a couple of elementary schools there, Caledonia and Prospect. Went to, Kirk Junior High School. Went to 2 years of Shaw High, which the older Shaw High has been torn down and renovated. And recently went to a 30-plus class reunion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Saw friends that I hadn't seen since I was 16 years old. Yeah, it was exciting.
I had friends that went to Caledonia and Kirk. Yeah, so
it's
all the old names that I haven't thought about in a long time.
Yeah.
So you spent most of your young childhood in Cleveland, and then moved on to, was it Florida?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Actually, born in Florida, family moved to Ohio, went to school in Cleveland until I was 16, and then we moved back to Florida, North Florida. And went to a high school there for 2 years, graduated. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, if you're ever back for your next reunion, you'll have to let me know.
I will. I wish I had known in September. Had I not been a procrastinator, I would have.
Well, now we know. And now you're involved in the legal system. Tell us a bit about that.
A kind of exciting story about that. The judge that I worked for was appointed by Governor Barnes in 2002. Unfortunately, in 2002, I actually worked for Governor Barnes as a special assistant to the governor. I guess I should start with that. And he lost the election in 2002, which was a surprise to everybody. And as a result, folks were scrambling around looking for jobs. And somebody asked me, do you want to work for a judge? And I was like, never thought about it. And so I, of course, went through the interview process, and she, at the time, because she was appointed, she was like, I forgot I needed a judicial assistant. So I was the first to apply, first to interview, and as a result, I was hired, and I worked for her for 13 years. Mm. But let me tell you something that's really interesting. After I worked for her for about a year or so, I went through a journal, because I've always journaled. Well, I started journaling when I was 16. In my journal was that I wanted to work for a judge. It was on my bucket, per se. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. But I thought I was going to be the law clerk. Mm-hmm. But I thought, wow, I wrote this down, and I'm actually working for a judge.
Isn't that something?
I was just shocked. I had forgotten all about it.
You don't know if what you put out there comes back. And, I mean, the whole idea of journaling is very important. And I read on your website something rather sad, is that you lost all of your early journals.
I did.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know when you're a teenager, life is so much more dramatic. it's unavoidable. And because of the move from Ohio to Florida, I started journaling. Because I had made lifelong friends up there. I had friends up there that I'd known since second grade that I am still friends with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started writing poetry. I started journaling. And around, I think, when I was 28, sometime after I graduated from college, had my own apartment, yada, yada. Right before I got married, I threw everything away by mistake because
oh.
I had a bad habit of, well, it's not a bad habit, but I used to read in the bed before I went to bed at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I distinctly remember sitting, placing the poetry in journals, whatever, on a stack of newspaper, and I don't know why.
Oh.
And I threw everything away. I threw it away when I was, you know, getting...
Oh.
Because I was going to move from Georgia to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And for years I was like, no, you didn't throw it away. You packed it. One day you'll find it. But realistically, I remember sitting it on a stack of newspaper all the way. And
oh.
I was devastated for a little while. Then I thought, you got to get past it. It's just gone. You know?
Oh, wow. That, I can imagine how hurtful that must have been because that's like a piece of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. We have to learn to live with these things, don't we?
We do.
Yeah.
I learned not to
yeah.
place my important writings on top of news.
Exactly. That'll never happen again.
No, never.
So what was that aha moment that led you to begin writing, say, professionally?
Another move. After I was married, I moved to Texas. Then we moved back to Georgia. Then we moved again to North Carolina. We moved to the Raleigh area. And my husband, and people always ask, if my husband was military. He was not military. He was high-level manager in computer companies, I'll just say that.
Mm.
And so he moved around a lot. And I worked for IBM at the time. And when I moved to North Carolina, they transferred my job, but I didn't have any work to do, which I thought was interesting. So I would go to work every day and had nothing to do.
Oh.
And I started writing. Out of boredom, I just started writing a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about this morning. I was like, really, what made me, other than boredom, what made me start writing? I also commuted to work from a small town outside of Raleigh. So it took me about 25, 30 minutes to get to Raleigh. And I remember a song playing by Montel Jordan, This Is How We Do It. And something about that song, just to this day, I don't know what it was, but it was something about that song that made me kind of happy,
mm-hmm.
and it made me feel like writing. So I started writing, you know, in addition to that, out of boredom. And one day my best friend called me from Atlanta, and she said, what are you reading these days? And she said, because she had run out of novels to read. And I said, well, I read her the first chapter from what I had written.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, that sounds great. Give me the title of the book and the author, and I'll go buy the book. And I said, no, I wrote that. And she was like, get the heck out of here. And I was like, no, I wrote it. And she's like, oh, my God, you got to write a book. You have to write a book.
Oh,
and shortly thereafter, IBM found work for me. So it kind of put the book on the back burner. But I wrote a little here and there. And that was 1995. I finished the book in 1998. And she was like my biggest fan. She was like, oh, my God, this book is so good. It is so good. It is so good. And I was like, yeah, it's one thing for your friends to tell you it's
mm-hmm.
good or a family member.
Mm-hmm.
But is it really marketable? Is it a good book? Will other people like it? So at work I would let people read it, and I would get the same input that it was a good book. I still didn't publish it until 2003
mm-hmm.
because I knew nothing about publishing, absolutely nothing. And one of the girls that worked at the Capitol began dating a publisher, and she introduced us, and that's initially how I became a published author.
And that's the book Every Time I Close My Eyes?
Every Time I Close My Eyes.
Okay, so then you said it was re-released, so what happened with that?
Wow.
I knew there was a story there.
There was some drama behind that as well, because the publisher was an independent publisher. I began to have legal issues. Like, to this day, I've never received a royalty from him.
Mm.
Which, you know, at first, I was really upset and very emotional about it because I'm like, oh, my goodness, this person is going to steal my story. Because, you know, when you write a story, it becomes like your baby.
Absolutely.
And had to retain an attorney,
ugh.
Went through all the legal mumbo-jumbo. Eventually, I came to the conclusion that it was just an emotional loss. I never signed a contract with him. I never signed anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I called the attorney one day and I said, look, I thought about this. I know that the story belongs to me. I can re-release it one day. She said, absolutely. Absolutely, because you're spending all this money and nothing is happening. And if we go to court, you're going to be out of thousands and thousands of dollars just to get your story back, which belongs to you anyway. And so what that taught me was learn about the publishing industry, learn about as much as you can about writing. And I joined Atlanta Writers Club, which has been established since 1914. And then there was another club I joined, Black Writers with Purpose. And I just learned, absorbed as much as I could absorb. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I was like, I can do this on my own. I can. And by the time I had learned all of this information, the publishing industry had changed tremendously, which benefited me because then you had, before you had the, what do you call it, the print-on-demand publishers. And I wasn't a big fan of that. So I investigated and researched, but I just wasn't a fan. But by the time I learned everything that, or got to a point where I felt that I had learned enough information, I was able to publish myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to publish myself. And I thought I'll change the cover.
Mm-hmm.
So the original cover was like a yellow cover and had a couple on there that looked like they were daydreaming. And it was a beautiful cover. It was beautiful. At the time, I was married. By the time I re-released, I was divorced. So I thought, get a pen name, the cover, so that they don't look remotely the same,
mm-hmm.
and re-release the book.
There you
re-release
go.
It. Do this. You can do it. And I did it.
Wow. Such life lessons you've learned with this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. So I don't begrudge the publisher at all, because I thought maybe the lesson that I was supposed to learn was how to do this.
Yes.
And that I could help other people, mm-hmm. which is what I became my mission, which led me into becoming an editor.
Okay.
And I thought, let me do this and help other people who are new in this experience and who need some guidance and, you know, don't know who to ask or what to ask. Mm-hmm. And the editing part came as a result of me opening, because when the book was first published, I never opened it to read it. I don't know what it was, but I was very hesitant about opening it to read it, and I never read it for 10 years. But I remember being, I don't know if it was ambivalent or embarrassed. I don't know what it was, even though people were applauding me for publishing a book. But when I opened it, I realized that it hadn't been properly edited.
Mm-hmm.
And then I spoke with the person who actually did the editing, and I thought, she's not an editor.
Yeah.
She couldn't do a good job. It was impossible. It was the girl that dated the publisher in the first place.
Okay.
And I knew she couldn't do a good, she could not have done a good job. So that led me into wanting to be an editor and help other people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, your book is your product. You are your brand. And if your book if it looks lousy, that people will think, you know, they'll think badly of you.
No, it's true. It's true. It's a representation of you. I mean, hopefully you do put your whole heart and soul and your whole person into it. And you need to be congratulated for taking this potentially negative experience and not dwelling and living in it and pulling out of it and saying, okay, I can do this and I can also help people along the way.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, congratulations. That's, again, another huge life lesson from a real life experience. So maybe why don't you share a bit about that book? What is it about, Every Time I Close My Eyes? Give us a little synopsis.
Well, actually the book was written, in addition to starting it because I was bored, I was very unhappily married. It wasn't a bad marriage. It was just extremely unhappy. And I wanted to be happy, and I wanted to feel love, and I wanted to be in love. So that's what I wrote about, and the title came from Every Time I Close My Eyes, That's What I Thought About, you know, being in love. So the story is about a young woman, ironically enough, that meets somebody on the day she becomes, her divorce is final. And she doesn't want to enter into a relationship, but this guy, who is an up-and-coming R&B singer, knows that this is the love that he's been looking for. And so as a result, he writes a song every time I close my eyes, because he's saying every time he thinks of love and the person he wants to love, she is the person that he had always thought of. He just had to meet her. Mm-hmm. And so the story just is about their relationship and the, you know, the ups and downs and her fighting, being in a relationship, him fighting to make her want to be in the relationship. And I don't want to say how it ends. But
no, don't spoil it.
But I'll tell you this. Every book club that I've ever gone to, every person that has ever read it has come back to me and said, after I read that book, I wanted to be in love.
Oh.
I met a coworker from the courthouse at a book event once. We didn't know each other, but we knew each other in passing. So she came over to my table, and we talked. She's like, oh, I didn't know that you were an author. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, I'm going on a cruise. I need to buy a book. And I told her what the book is about. And she was like, I don't want to be in love.
Oh.
She said, it's not going to do that to me. She had gone through a difficult divorce. She's like, she wasn't interested in relationships. And before she even, I want to say before she made it to the cruise, they flew to Florida. She emailed me and said, oh, my God. I started reading the book on the airplane, and I could not put it down. And you made me think love is possible again.
Oh.
So I want to be in love. So I was like, okay, then I've done my job.
Did your job there, Taya. You are awesome. I love this. So, I mean, again, you're drawing from real life experiences and pouring your heart into it. And then you end out with this beautiful book, Every Time I Close My Eyes. And now your second book, Daddy's Big Girl, is a look at divorce from the perspective of an adult child. So why don't you give us a little synopsis of that as well?
Okay. Actually, another life experience.
Okay.
One thing that I've learned as a writer is that everything is a potential for a story.
Mm-hmm.
And which was funny, that was something I was learning, you know, when I was part of these writing groups and clubs, that everything becomes a potential for story. So when I was, I think, 37, my mom and dad became divorced after being married for 38 years,
mm-hmm.
which I could not wrap my mind around that. And it was very difficult for me. And my three siblings, I have three younger brothers. And more difficult for them than me, but I had an outlet. I journal. So as I'm journaling, one day I'm like, ooh, like a great story. Just, you know, the nuance of what's happening is here, but I won't write about them specifically.
Right.
But I can write about adult children dealing with divorce from the perspective of an only child who is a professional, she's an attorney, and how she dealt with it, because it does affect adult children.
Mm-hmm.
It does affect, it affects you. I mean, if these are your parents, this is what you've known as, particularly if you've known it as a solid, successful relationship, and all of a sudden they get a divorce,
yeah.
Very troubling. And changed a few things in the story, but was very pleased with how it came out, and it ended up being much longer than I anticipated, but I thought that's because it's kind of, it's real to me, and it was cathartic.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it has a different kind of ending. My ex-mother-in-law, who I spoke with recently, said that my book is the only novel she's ever read.
Oh.
She's 80 years old. And she read Daddy's Big Girl, and she said, which was interesting because I also sent her Every Time I Close My Eyes, so apparently she just never read it.
Oh, okay.
It's okay. So she told me, she said, yeah, I read your book. She said, I loved it. She said, when I had to put it down, I tried to rush to do whatever I had to do so that I could get back to find out what was going on, because I always wanted to know what was going to happen.
Oh.
And so she's like, if you write anything else, please send it to me because I will read it.
Oh.
And I might not stop this time. I might just sit there and read the whole book. I was extremely flattered
mm-hmm.
by the compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing about my stories is that the market is pretty big. Every Time I Close My Eyes was used as a chapter book in one of the high schools here, an alternative high school.
Oh.
It was used by a school in Florida, middle school in Florida. Adult women love it. Adult men have read it and commented that they love it. And the book clubs that I've gone to, the readers have been like early 20s to mid, late 70s. So my market is pretty huge. And I've never done any real marketing, but I know that my market is huge because I don't use foul language, gratuitous sex, or violence, because I want I want my mother to read it.
No, it's got to pass the mom test.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So my stories always come from a little bit of life experience, just as any other writer.
Mm-hmm.
The kernel of life is in there, you know.
Absolutely, for sure. And are there any sequels to either of these?
Interestingly enough, initially, every time I closed my eyes, did not have a sequel, but everybody always asked for a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, there is no sequel. Because, that book was also cathartic. When I finished, I was happy. I wanted to be in love. And, you know, I went through all the emotions that you go through in a relationship. One day, literally, sat up in the bed, and I was like, double vision. That's the sequel to Every Time I Close My Eyes.
Oh.
It just came to me one day. I was not thinking about it. Was about to get up and, you know, get ready for work, get my day started. And the title just popped in my head. I was like, double vision.
Oh.
So, as I often do, of course, I got up and I jotted down some notes. And it takes me years to write my books. I don't know why, but it takes years. So I jotted down notes, the main characters. I started doing bios on all the characters. Everybody came to me. And the storyline came to me. I haven't written it yet because I wanted to finish my third book, but that one is next up. But yeah, there's gonna be a sequel to Every Time I Close My Eyes, and possibly even Daddy's Big Girl.
All right.
Possibly. Well,
now all of your fans have something to look forward to.
Yes.
Now your upcoming book, is it really titled Yet to Be Determined?
That is the title.
I love it. I'm like, is this a typo? Are you sure it's titled, or you don't have a title?
I know, and it's funny because when people ask me, I always have to say, this is the actual title, because it sounds like I'm waiting on the title to come to me. But that's the actual title because the story kind of lends itself to learning things when you're young and thinking that you know what you want to do, but it's yet to be determined.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what you want to do. And you don't know where life will lead you, you know. So that story is about a young girl who's given a college project to read a book about someone born, like, maybe in the Harlem Renaissance, during the Harlem Renaissance, and to find out how that era affected their lives.
Mm.
And she picks up a book and realizes that the author doesn't live far from the college. She goes to Miles College in Alabama. And so she decides she wants to meet the author, who's an elderly lady by this time. And in meeting that the author of the book, she forges a relationship with the author and the author's two elderly sisters. And so really that's what the story is about, her relationship with them and the things that transpire in that relationship.
So exciting. So where are you in that process? She laughs.
Almost finished. I was just talking to somebody about it today. I was like, I think I have 3 chapters, which means there are probably 6 to 7 chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you start writing, you can't stop until the story stops.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So initially my plan was to have it out by December, but I don't.
Don't rush it. Yeah.
I don't rush.
Mm-mm. No.
As it comes to me, I write it. But my plan really is to have it out by February.
Okay.
And I'm working on the cover of the book, which is always very important to me. I learned with Daddy's Big Girl that I am an eccentric author, artist, person, because I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown with the graphic designer, because our visual,
mm-hmm.
we weren't seeing the same thing.
Sure.
We just were not, and to this day, I love him. I absolutely love him, but we just could not, our vision for the cover wasn't the same. I was drawing little pictures. I was sending clip art. I was saying, this is what I want. These are the colors. And he just never would send it to me like that. And I don't know what was going on with him, because
mm-hmm.
he's an awesome graphic designer. And he's designed thousands of covers. And so I had my cousin laugh, and I was like, I thought I was having a nervous breakdown over the cover. And so for the third cover, I wasn't going to use them, and my cousin encouraged me to use them. My cousin is also an author, and he said, use them, you know. If I need to talk with them, I'll talk with them, because he also uses him for his covers. So we had an impasse, and then I thought, that's okay. I'll go find a photographer. We'll set up the scene. I'll take pictures, and then he can cover from the pictures that I give him.
Right.
Because it's important to me that the cover looks vintage.
Okay.
And black and white photos are involved. I've had to get copyrights from people. So it's just, I just want it like I want it, because that's important.
Well, you know, they say judge a book by its cover, and people certainly do. I mean, that's the first impression, is just like you and me. You know, when you enter a room, people make that judgment as soon as they see you before they even dig inside. So, yep, the cover is very important. Now, you also write poetry as well, and I read some of the poems you have on your website and just fell in love with them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, thank you. I'm not in a poet's mind these days.
No.
Which, you know, that kind of comes and goes. I could, usually every year, actually every year for the last 10 years, except this year, I usually go to one of the alternative schools twice a year and participate in April, which is Poetry Month, and February, Black History Month, and they do a poetry slam. So I usually go and I recite a poem or do some spoken word, and also judge some of the students who are phenomenal, because young people have all this emotion and hormones and drama. They are phenomenal. So I haven't done it this year. So I haven't been in that space
right
this year.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you really do have to be in that mindset, because they're two complete different mindsets.
They are.
They are, yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about your writing process. When, where do you write, how often?
I like to say I'm very undisciplined.
Mm-hmm.
I like to write when I feel it. So I don't say that I have to write 2 hours every day, because some days it's just absolutely unrealistic. I'm not going to do it. I know that I'm not going to do it. But if something comes to me, I can be at work. I will stop everything and start writing. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I have that kind of job where I can do it and nobody knows what I'm doing.
Right.
I just kind of do it. But the first book, every time I close my eyes, I did an outline. I like outlines because I want to keep time sequence, you know, correct,
right,
and everything in order. And I do the bios for the characters because I want them to be real. So if they're real, if I do the bio, I know everything about them. Even if I never include it in the story,
mm-hmm,
I know everything, like if they're an only child or what, where they fall in line with their siblings, if their parents are alive, if they're divorced, if everything imaginable, even if I never use it. Because I think when I have that, it makes the characters more real in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And people pick up on that. And what I learned over and over and over again is that when you write a story, just tell the truth and make it as real as possible, because you can always go back and, you know, change things. But once you write the truth is there. So even if you edit something out or change it, the truth is still there. And so with the second story, I wanted to do something different. I was like, well, what is it like to write without an outline? Because I, you know, had met lots of writers who say they never use an outline. So, or did I use an outline? I didn't do an outline, but I did lots and lots of research. The first book, I did no research, because it was just from my heart. It was just made up from my heart. The second one, I did lots of research. So I had a binder just filled with things, like the story takes place in outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. So I researched Charlotte and restaurants and hotels and golf clubs, just everything imaginable about that's included in the story.
Mm-hmm.
But I never did an outline, but I did do the bios, because I had to do that for the characters. But I kind of like the outline version better.
You feel more comfortable with that.
Yeah, yeah. I feel more comfortable with the outline. And I take lots of notes, so if something comes to me and I can't write, or if I'm not prepared to work on the story, I jot down notes. Mm-hmm. And I keep up with that. And with the third story, didn't do an outline as much as I just did a lot of research because I had to research the Harlem Renaissance. I went back in the characters, the three elderly women's genealogy. So I had to be able to talk about that, their experience, their life experiences. One of them was a sous chef in France. So I had to do all this research, which I find is much more fun sometimes than writing. Get lost in the research.
I was going to say, that's why it takes a long time to get something finished, because, you know, you get involved in research. I know I do that. You start looking at one thing and you end out somewhere else, and you could be a professional researcher.
Yeah.
I understand. I've done that myself. So now, as you've written your books, have you learned anything about yourself that you didn't know prior to writing?
I'm a people person when necessary. And a friend of mine recently made me do the personality test.
Yes.
And I ended up, and I told her, I promise I won't forget. I know that I'm an INFJ.
Okay.
Which means I really like being by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that as much until I started writing, that I really enjoy being by myself because I'm never by myself because I have all of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And when I thought about it, I probably had characters when I was 16 and didn't realize that it was going to mature to, you know, writing novels.
Right.
And when I was in college, I did have a professor that suggested that I major in English or writing, creative writing or something. I was like, no, because I didn't believe I could eat. And, you know, it was important to me.
Sorry, I got to eat.
I want to eat and pay the bills. And, but I learned that I'm very introspective,
mm-hmm.
that I much more enjoy my time alone than I do with my friends, and that even when I'm with my friends, I like small groups. I don't want to be in a large group.
Mm-hmm.
I like more intimate groups.
Interesting.
And so I think I kind of learned that from writing that, and I feel a little intruded upon when they want to know what I'm writing, but they don't give me time to write. Like they call, I don't talk on the phone a lot,
mm-hmm.
which is one thing I did learn about myself. I didn't realize it. I thought I talked a lot, but I don't. My friends are constantly saying, "You never call." Well, it's because I want to write.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not writing, I'm editing. So I learned that I'm extremely comfortable with myself.
You took the Myers-Briggs type indicator.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly what I did.
I'm certified to do that. When you mentioned talking on the phone, that is one of my pet peeves. I just don't like to talk on the phone. It's such a waste of time to say nothing.
That's what I feel.
Like, oh my gosh. Wow. I feel like we really got to know you today. But before we wind up, is there anything then that we missed that you would like to talk about?
Just for new writers, because I meet people all the time that says, I want to write a book, but I don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, just sit down and start writing. There's no such place as a starting place. Just sit down and start writing, because you can always go back and change things. You can always go back and start the story over any way that you want to. But just sit down and start writing, and that it's really important to have an editor. Not a friend, not a family member, but somebody who has a good grasp of grammar, sentence structure, you know, and get them to look at your work, and then you're ready. You know, mm-hmm. and publishing is not that difficult anymore.
Right.
It's not difficult, but you want to put out quality work. You want to put out quality work because, like you said earlier, and I guess like I said, it represents you, and you want to put out the best possible representation of yourself.
Yes. Thank you. That's excellent advice. And so I hope folks take heed. And so you also offer editing services?
I do.
Okay. So why don't you let us know where folks can go to learn more about you and the services that you offer and where they can purchase your books?
They could actually go to www.simplytrbaker.com. The name of my editing company is Butterfly Whispers, because I really like butterflies, and whispering words,
mm-hmm.
you know, just the play in words. I really like that. But they can also email me at simplytrbaker@gmail.com.
Simplytrbaker.com.
Yeah, correct.
Right. Taya, what a special treat this was today. I knew that a fellow Clevelander, we were going to have a good time. Thank you for sharing your personal background, your books, and your wisdom with everyone today. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, and I'm just getting my footing back. I haven't done anything for a while, and I don't know why, but I'm ready to get started again because I feel the writing bug coming back, and I think with this third book, I decided, okay, I'm going to do something. I'm going to take a social media marketing class. I'm going to market and actually market my books and sell them and get back out there and do the book club thing. And I love talking about the stories because readers are funny. They make your characters more alive than you ever thought they could be. And I love that. I love it.
I love that, and I love you. I love that we have this opportunity to share. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. It's been a pleasure.